Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel, our summer series continues where we revisit the conversations that still resonate just as powerfully today as when they first aired. And today's replay is with someone who embodies what this show is all about, Kathy Griffin. When we first released this episode, Kathy had just kicked off her tour. Since then, she's taken that show across the country, earning standing ovations in every single city she's been in. The headlines keep coming, the tickets keep selling, and one thing is clear, Kathy Griffin is in the middle of a full-blown comeback. But in our conversation, we go deeper than the stage lights and the applause. Kathy opens up about one of the most defining and devastating moments of her career, the backlash that came after she posted that infamous photo of herself holding a fake severed head of Donald Trump. She walks us through the personal and professional fallout, the lost work, the threats, the family who disappeared, the marriage that ended, and how it changed her life in ways most people cannot even imagine. This isn't a story about comedy or controversy. It's a story about survival and resilience and the guts it takes to get back up when the world tries to keep you down. If you missed it the first time, now's your chance to hear it again. Raw, honest, and in her own words, hit play and see why this episode is one of our most unforgettable. So please join my conversation with Kathy Griffin. Miss Kathy Griffin, it is such an honor to have you here on Misunderstood. Thank you for joining me.
Well, I just love you. And I don't know if you remember the time we met. But
oh, my God. Of course I remember. Kathy, are you kidding? How would I not remember? Tell me your recollection.
My version is we were at something really fancy, and it was either the Carousel Ball or the Clive Davis pre-Grammy party, but it was like a black tie event, and I'm there, and it's always crowded at those things, and people don't pay enough attention to what's happening on stage, which, of course, as a comic, drives me nuts. And then this beautiful young girl comes up, and she goes, well, if you're going to make fun of me, you might as well get to know me. I turn around and I didn't recognize you at first. And you go, Rachel, you could tell. And I was like, what? So I have to tell you, it's honestly the most gratifying thing as a comic when someone that I talk about on my act actually like comes up to me and is a human being. Because I'm used to people waving their finger in my face or telling me, how dare you say that? And you were like, might as well get to know me.
And absolutely. Wait, I have the picture right here because in doing my research on you, this came up. Do you remember? I was Jason Davis's date, and it was at the Carousel Ball for his grandmother or whatever, because Jason and I had just been on Celebrity Rehab together. Yeah. And what I remember about this is I was looking for somebody to take the photo with my camera, and Brandy walked by and you were like, oh, take the photo. And she was like, no, it was terrible.
Oh my God. I thought you'd be a good photographer.
Of course. But I always, for so long, people would, you know, I would talk about who, you know, if I could have a group of best friends, who would it be? And it was always you, Jeff Lewis, Nancy Grace, and Bill Maher. You guys were my four.
Oh my God. That is a round table.
It's a round table. So anyways, I'm so happy that we've now come full circle and you can be on my show, which is about people who have been reduced to a headline and know what it's like to have the whole world hate on them.
Guilty as charged. Right here. I'm an expert in this field.
I know you are. So before we get into all that, I want to say I'm so happy that you are back. You are in the news now, obviously, because you are on your 40-city tour. My life on the PTSD list, I think it's just phenomenal. What does that feel like to be on tour again?
It feels like I'm home. You know, after my Trump photo scandal, I did not work for 6 long years. And I kind of lost my mind, you know, because I'm a happy workaholic. And that investigation was very intense by the Department of Justice. And then, of course, I got beyond canceled. I mean, actually investigated. And they were thinking of charging me with conspiracy to assassinate the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, the heaviness of that, then it doesn't stop there. So then I just sat around all day just abusing prescription pills. So then I tried to take my life and I overdosed and I ended up on a 5150 cycle for 3 days.
Okay, wait, you're going way too fast. This is crazy. So I don't know which one I want to ask you about first, but wait, let's talk about that because you get to the point where you're so empty and you feel like no one's there. So spool back for 1 second. Yeah. Obviously the stuff with Trump happened. For people that don't know, if they've been living under a rock, you, as a joke, posted a photo of you holding a mask with blood, whatever, what, ketchup? What was it?
Ketchup.
Yeah. And the Trump people took it very seriously, way too seriously. By the way, do you think nowadays that it would have had the same kind of reaction?
I don't know, because it was 2017, which seems like 10 lifetimes ago. Mm. I think it would have been different if it was a guy comic. I think Trump came for me because I'm a woman and I didn't have, like, I wasn't at Bravo anymore. Like, I didn't have any institutional support.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons it snowballed. But if I was, I mean, I have posted the picture a couple of times since then. Mm. Like the night that Trump did not concede, I posted it again. And it was mostly people going, oh yeah, you tried to warn us. And, you know, that photo can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. And I don't mind one bit if people think it's disgusting or offended. That's, they're right. I have no issue with that at all.
Right.
I think if I posted it now, well, first of all, during Biden, it would be different because my investigation came directly from the Oval Office. And I know that because I filed a Freedom of Information Act and it revealed how serious they were. So if Trump gets reelected, which a lot of people think is possible, then I would guess he would come for me again in some way, just because I know him to be very petty. And I've known him for many years, off and on. And it seems like that's the sort of thing that kind of gets him off, is going for people, and in particular women, which is why I took the photo.
You know,
he famously said, not that I want to freaking defend Megyn Kelly, but he had famously said when she was moderating one of the debates, there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, let's do a picture of him where there's blood coming out of his wherever. And that was about as deep as it went. It wasn't the most deep thought I've ever had. I never thought the picture would see the light of day. I never thought the photographer would give it to TMZ, where Harvey Levin has a very cozy relationship with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And then the photo was turned into a meme and sent to Iran and Russia and China. And then I was a terrorist and I was put on the no-fly list, which made it near impossible to tour. And so my work...
Does that really mean you could not get on an airplane?
Yeah. And so I couldn't get on an airplane any place in the United States or overseas. And then after 2 months, when I was finally exonerated, and I have an email from the Department of Justice saying, you've been exonerated. Mm. And I was not put on the no-fly list, but I was flagged. So I was stopped at every airport in the United States and overseas. And I was put on the Interpol list overseas. So I had to tour overseas first because I knew I couldn't make a living here because people were still too mad at me. And the cancellation was no joke. And so I did a tour overseas first and then Canada and then the United States. But I was still stopped at every airport.
But I mean, do you think people really took that seriously? I mean, if you were to ask anyone with some common sense, they would know you're a comedian, even if you weren't a comedian. It's a joke. It's stupid. It's like, what is with the big reaction? And I agree with you that he can be very petty. On a side note, you know, Donald Trump called me personally when I happened to be in the middle of my scandal and my name was the most famous name in not only the United States, but probably the world for a good hot minute. He called me personally. He asked me to be on The Apprentice. I agreed. And then I felt like it was a bad idea. So I backed out and instead I went on Celebrity Rehab because I felt a connection with Dr. Drew. Yeah. He went on TMZ with Harvey Levin and said, I don't even know that girl. I've never spoken to her. I would never ask her to be on The Apprentice. And I was like, what an asshole. Like, it was because I chose someone else over him. So, and the other thing was then later he called to apologize, invited me to his New Year's Eve dinner, whatever, that he has at Mar-a-Lago. And I went as a guest of someone. He hired someone that was a Tiger Woods impersonator to walk around the room and try and get a photo with me. I mean, how dumb. Like, we're talking about someone in like eighth grade. You know what I mean?
And this is what, an 80-year-old man? I mean, yeah. it's crazy. Yeah. And so one of the reasons I took the photo is, look, there's a long history and legacy of comedians, not just making jokes, but also making statements. You know, sometimes we say the stuff that's uncomfortable, and sometimes it's wrapped in a joke, and sometimes it's kind of just for shock value. So I agree. That photo was for shock value. But I felt like people, especially women, weren't taking it seriously enough to show how dangerous he really is.
Yeah.
I'm a proud Democrat. I'm not here to sway anybody's vote, but everybody knows how I feel. But just the notion that the President of the United States and the Attorney General could decide, because they don't like you, that they're going to put you on the no-fly list. Nobody, like you said, with any common sense, thought that I was going to go to the White House and chop off Donald Trump's head with a freaking machete or something. But right. The number of people that act like that photo was real is just BS. Because now the MAGA people, they love to recirculate that photo. Mm-hmm. You know, like James Woods or Kevin Sorbo or all these stars that became MAGA people. They throw that photo up way more than I ever did. And they love to say that I should be at Guantanamo Bay. So Trump does remember all this kind of stuff. So, you know, he'll probably try to throw me in Guantanamo Bay with the other members of ISIS, because I would put nothing past him.
Right.
And now a lot of the Trumpers have turned into QAnons. And so now the QAnon people think I went to Epstein Island with Hillary Clinton, Madonna, and Tom Hanks, and I'm harvesting baby parts. So I don't know what this world is that we're living in. You know, last time I checked, you're supposed to be able to make a joke about people, places, and things.
Right.
But I do feel like about a third of the voting population is behaving like they're in a cult and acting like you thought I was a threat to your leader really does look like BS 6 years later.
So I want to talk about like the getting through it part, because as I know from someone who's been through something similar, that getting through it is really hard because you're by yourself. People loathe you. Your friends disappear. They think you're a bad look or whatever. Sometimes your family walks out on you and you have no one to even listen to you because you want to say what's going on and what your truth is. And in my case, I couldn't, but in your case, it seems like the phone call stopped and people just decided to take to walk away. What was that like for 6 years, not getting phone calls for work, worrying about how you're going to make a living? And then not only that, all the other things you went through, like from your addiction to the point you wanted to take your life to, your
lung cancer. I never even smoked and I got lung cancer. I have half a lung on my left side, Rachel. Half a lung. How about that? Ridiculous.
Yeah. Terrible. I mean, so how did you get through that?
Well, the part about the friends deserting me still hurts. It's just brutal. And as you said it perfectly, like some people just think you're bad luck or they just think you're toxic. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy because I would never imagine dumping a friend over something like this. Mm-hmm. But there were a few people I knew that became Trump supporters. So they were very loud and proud about how they felt about me publicly and also to me privately. I had senators calling me that I had fundraisers for saying, I can't be seen with you. You know, it was really heavy. CNN firing me on the ticker. No one even called me, and then Anderson Cooper made a statement, which was hurtful to me because I really loved him and I thought we were good friends.
Yeah.
So the level of betrayal was really intense. And of course I was on a media blackout, which you probably were too, because social media was just unhinged. I think I got kicked off all the platforms. I can't remember, but it was crazy how, as you know, I couldn't turn on CNN because there'd be, a tri-split of three people talking about my photo and they were all against me. Like, it wasn't like they'd put on, like in your case, it wasn't like they'd have someone that was saying good things about you. It was all three people trashing you. And in my case, saying it was over. And the notion that they kept saying, and she deserves everything she has coming to her. She brought this on herself. And I thought, I've taken way more offensive photos than that. And I've said things that are way more offensive. Mm-hmm. This is just the one people decided to hang their hat on. The amount of negativity is something you understand because it's almost inexplicable because you're getting it from the media, from your personal friends, from people that like go out of their way to call you. Like my phone was blowing up from people I hadn't talked to in 10 years. Yeah. And I don't know if you found this, but I found there was a weird group of hangers on, and it's almost like they wanted to be around that level of chaos.
Yeah.
So I had to say to certain people, like one guy came over and I was just crying and I wasn't myself. And it was only a few days in, and he just kept saying, "Nobody saw that picture. What's the big deal?" And then I had to explain to him how it had blown up and why it was a global issue now. And he just kept saying like, "Oh, I think you're
it'll pass." Yeah.
Yeah. And I had to say like, I have to ask you to leave. I love you, but you're like not helping. So did you find that when you were in the thick of it, odd people kind of came out of the woodwork just to sort of be around the chaos?
Oh, there is a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9 to 5, where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. And the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. That's peacecorps.gov/serve. 100%. Some of my closest friends are people I thought would never walk away dead. And then some were so triggered by their own issues. At the time I couldn't see it, but now I can. And then when you see other scandals and you see the level of anger that people share and go after someone, and you're like, but that, what, it's about you now. Like that, you, nobody knew me. Nobody really knew you personally. It clearly was a joke. And the level of anger and betrayal was their own issue and triggered by something that they felt and something that they wanted to get in a herd mentality about, I think. And then there were people that would come in, friends of mine that would be like, "Rachel, oh my God, get over it. Like, whatever, this is not a big deal. You're not famous. Like, no one even cares. No one knows who you are." And I would be like, "You have no idea what I'm going through." Like, anyone else would have jumped over a bridge at this point. Like, this is so terrible. And I have to be honest with you, because I know that you tried to commit suicide, and thank God you woke up from taking those pills. The only reason that I didn't have what I call the courage to do something like that, because there were times that I really wanted to. I wasn't as courageous, but I felt like I had two dogs at the time, and I loved my dogs. And I was like, who's going to take care of these dogs? Right. And I felt like everyone hated me and didn't like, those dogs would go into like a shelter or something. Yeah. And I felt like I had to be there for them. And that was what kept me around. And then even in darker times later, as life has gone on and that stigma has, it's taken, you know, it's faded, but it's still not gone. And, right. When I have, I've had a daughter, I have an 11-year-old daughter, but over the course of times when things have gotten really bad, I think to myself, I don't want her dad to have custody. I don't want anyone else to have custody of her. I need to be able to see her through life. So that keeps me around. But what kept you around during this time?
First of all, I just was convinced. And first of all, this really was the pill addiction talking. So I'm in recovery now for 3.5 years, but I became very seriously addicted to prescription pills. And I know I'm blaming the Trump thing for everything, but that's really when it kicked into high gear, because I was just sitting around all day, not working. All of a sudden I'm on I was on a 50 city tour. The last 25 cities are canceled because of bomb threats to the theaters and death threats to me and all this other stuff. And I just thought, well, I'm jacked up on pills, and I'm thinking, I've had a good run. I've had a good life.
Now I thought it was over.
Now it's over. It's over. And my then husband, I'm getting divorced also, but my then husband, I thought he'd be better off without me. By the way, now that we're getting divorced, he'll be better off without me anyway. But I laugh at everything, because you just have to laugh at everything. But I talk about it in my new show. And I know that's tricky, because I'm literally talking about my suicide attempt, but it was so over the top and it was so drug fueled that I actually want to look for the humor. Mm-hmm. And I can tell by how loving the audience is, because I say, okay, I'm going to talk about something really uncomfortable, And if you're not laughing, I'll move on. But if you're into it, I'll keep going. And I just let the audience decide. And I talk about the pill addiction. I talk about what it was like to be on a 5150 cycle for 3 days at Cedars-Sinai, the celebrity hospital. When I did not get the Beyonce birthing suite. Let me just say that. And then I talk about the lung cancer, because if one more oncologist says, yes, Ms. Kathy Lee Gifford, we can see you now, Ms. Gifford. You know, you just have to laugh at that stuff. And what am I going to do, yell at the receptionist at the oncologist's office? No. Yeah. And so, like I said, I'm going through a divorce now. That's another sort of bomb that went off in my life. And that's why I call the show My Life on the PTSD List, because I actually was diagnosed with complex PTSD, which I feel guilty even saying, because normally it's for, you know, combat veterans. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to know, have you ever been diagnosed with that?
Thank you for asking. I right before COVID, really had a breakdown. And it was like, I tried to open a children's store, which I did for 5 years. It was like known as the best children's store in New York. I loved it. But people would come in and be like, there'd be articles like, oh, I'm buying ritzy clothes from Tiger Woods' mistress. And it was like too much. I ended up during COVID having to close it. Yeah. There was a point where I was like, I can't handle life anymore. I don't have an identity. I have no agency to my name. Everyone else is Rachel Yucatel, comma, something. Yeah. I checked myself into the Meadows. I did not have any addictions. I mean, I took Ambien to go to sleep at night, and I, you know, I had some addictions like that, but I was not a drinker. I was not, you know, my father died of a cocaine overdose. I was very scared that I was going to become an addict. So I really didn't do all that stuff. Yeah. I checked myself in for 10 days. They do this big diagnosis thing on you, and they came back and said, you have post-traumatic stress disorder. And that obviously made sense, but I thought it was like, again, for combat, you know, warriors or people who had been through some really real trauma. And, you know, I've been through losing my father when I was young. I lost my fiance on September 11th. I went through one of the other, you know, one of the biggest sex scandals, you know, in our lifetime besides the Monica and Bill thing. Mm-hmm. And, it really took a toll on me that, you know, when I know you of all people know this, when you turn out the lights at night, put your head on the pillow and you're alone in your thoughts, that is the worst place to be when you're unhappy, when you're lost, you feel misunderstood, you feel like nobody gets you. And it's not even worth talking because you just can't explain what that's like to people and you don't know how you're going to have that comeback. Yeah. And for me, that was great to have a label kind of put on it that you have PTSD and this is how you can now deal with it. So no, I love the title of your show.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. And obviously it harkens back to My Life on the D-List, my TV show. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, Rachel, because you've been through real, real trauma. And so I would, you know, like I said, I'll make fun of my own diagnosis because that's what I do, but it makes sense for you. And you've had real deal trauma. And so I'm glad you went to the Meadows. That's very smart. I'm glad you're taking care of yourself. And when I first got sober, I went back and watched every single episode of Celebrity Rehab and Sober House. And I was so, I had seen it the first go around, but I'm glad you're friends with Drew Pinsky. I like him too. I'm glad you checked into the Meadows because that's very smart. Did you feel like you kind of had like a tune-up afterwards, or how did it make you feel?
I did. I mean, I felt like it gave me some tools, you know, to work with. I saw that I get into relationships for bad reasons and, you know, it definitely gave me tools and I felt seen, I felt heard, you know, and it was about taking that outside and, you know, figuring out how to move forward in my life. And obviously I still struggle with the things going on in my head, but I know how to deal with them better. And I know how to deal with the fact that things happened that doesn't make me who I am. So, you know, I really appreciate that, you know, someone said, here's what's going on with you. There's nothing wrong with you, you know, and this is why you turn to pills in your case, maybe, or it's why sometimes you're depressed or you do things, but you've turned to comedy, right? I mean, so so talk to me. I mean, I know that you've talked a little bit about, your suicide attempt. Was that like your rock bottom of being like, okay.
Yeah.
I need to want to live.
Yeah. And what happened was I took a bunch of pills and I thought I would take enough to go to sleep quietly. And all that happened was I stumbled around the house and I fell down the stairs and I woke up and I didn't know what happened. There was blood and bruises and lacerations.
Oh God.
And so I called one of my doctors who was dumb enough to give me a cell phone number. And I told him what happened. And I went in and they put me, you know, on a 3-day cycle. Mm-hmm. But what I'm grateful for is, number one, that someone, you know, my doctor said, come right in. He was like, we'll give you a checkup, you know, meaning he knew that if I tried to take my life, I should, you know, be on a cycle, which he was right. And I was really grateful because the doctor who saw me at Cedars, number one, she said something really meaningful. And it's kind of like when you're talking about your dogs before, but she said, you know, there's a lot of studies about how hard it is to be the survivor of someone who commits suicide, whether it's your best girlfriend or a relative. And I thought, yeah, I was being pretty selfish. I was whacked out on pills and I wasn't thinking about that. And I would feel guilty if one of my besties committed suicide. I'd feel like I hadn't done something or maybe I should have said something. So I was grateful she pointed that out. And then she hooked me up right away with a woman who's associated with AA and 12-step. Mm-hmm. And I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I never drank. Mm-hmm. It's the same addiction as pills. Yeah. But they have more choices for meetings. And I like to go to just women's meetings. Mm-hmm. And I was glad I got hooked up with AA because it's free. They don't have a leader, so it's not a cult. So I like the way they run and it's been around forever. So I got sober on Zoom and do Zoom meetings. I try to do one a day. And I did have to get new friends, which was kind of an art form. I'm 63 now. So the Trump thing happened when I was
great.
Seven. Well, I look fantastic. And my body's ridiculous, Rachel. Insane. Perhaps you've seen some of my bikini photos. Anyway, I had to learn that you can make new friends at this age. And I absolutely think the friends I have around me now are truly my best friends that I've ever had. And they're folks that I, you know, if I didn't meet them until after the Trump thing, they were people that even opened with like, by the way, that Trump thing was ridiculous. Or there's somebody that stuck through me. And to get through COVID and not working, I started having these salon lunches and dinners. And I want to have one for you next time you're in LA.
Oh, you're supposed to be. I want to ask you about that. But wait, before I ask you, how did you find these friends? Because I'm really like a recluse. Still, like, I don't trust people. I'm scared. It's not that I'm scared to open up to people. At this point, I'm kind of like, do you deserve for me to open up to you? Because are you going to betray me? And, you know, I feel very close to the people that I'm close to and I know, and it's very hard to meet new people. But like, I've met Meredith Lynch. I love her. I had her on my show. I felt connected to her. That's how I found out about your lunches. But how did you find these friends that you could trust?
Well, first of all, let go of the age issue, because I thought because of a certain age, I wouldn't be able to. I did get a lot of my new friends from AA. So I'd say about half my new friends are in the sober community. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because in AA meetings, you know, everybody shares for 3 minutes. And it really got me in the groove of being in environments that are just no BS, people just really talking about substantive things. If you're in an AA meeting and you got 3 minutes, you're probably talking about how you wanted to take a pill and you didn't, or how much your life is better without pills or alcohol. So it just got me in that, like, yeah, I can't do small talk anymore. Mm. I can do it a little bit, but like, then I want to move on to actually hearing from people.
Yeah.
And so I got a lot from AA. And then I just started to try to be open. If somebody would say, hey, do you want to bring somebody to one of these lunches or dinners? And I have a rule, which is no dum-dums. And I know that sounds silly, but I don't want to sit at a dinner party or lunch party with someone like, so I don't really read the news because it's negative. So I don't know anything. So you have to explain everything to me. So bring something to the table. Mm-hmm. So all I ask is honesty and authenticity. And I think I approach my friendships like that. But some of my friends I've gotten from going to my small group of people I actually trust. And like you said, you get to a place where you go, hey, I actually get to decide if I want to be your friend. I'm not just collecting anybody. And then they might have another good friend too. So we'll see what happens now that I'm single. I'm not looking for a guy, but I also want to be open Like, I don't want to shut myself off because you never know. But yeah, right. I didn't know how to find a guy. And yet this is how I felt when I was looking for friends. I thought, oh, I'll never have friends again.
Right.
Really, I learned these are kind of markers for someone who's trustworthy.
Yeah.
And then you get your antenna goes up for people that are going to kind of screw you over.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So you don't think you're going to go on like Bumble or Hinge anytime soon?
I'm too famous to go on Raya. What are you talking about? I'm just, you know,
I've been on the waiting list on Raya for like 7 years. They won't even let me on.
You can have anybody you want. No way.
No, but it's really hard out there. I mean, yeah. God, well, it's not hard to get a date. It won't be hard for you to get a date, but it'll be hard to get a date with somebody that you actually are impressed by. Or
well, it's hard to be a woman who's notorious.
Yeah.
And you and I are both not just well-known names. You and I are both now in the notorious category, which neither one of us signed up for. But that's the deal. Look, the great Jane Fonda told me about the Trump head picture. She said, that's going to be on your tombstone, kid. Just deal with it. Wow. And I would pass that on to you, meaning at first I would get really mad when people kept asking me about the Trump experience over and over. And then I realized, you know what? That's actually a normal, okay question. Mm-hmm. If I didn't know me, but if I took myself out and you said, hey, you're going to meet Kathy Griffin, I admit, I probably want to ask her maybe one question about the Trump photo. Mm-hmm. So I've learned, explain it in a succinct way. Don't be offended if someone asks.
Right. So get over that hump that they're stuck on and move
on. Get it
on.
Out. Yeah. And so I just, now I say it with a smile and I'm really honest and I try to get it out in like 90 seconds. So what do you do to this day when people ask you about this year scandal and Tiger and all this other stuff?
Well, I do feel the same way. I get annoyed. I'm like, oh my gosh. But I do, like exactly what you say, I do realize that this is how they associate me in their head. And I sort of still feel like I have to attack person one person at a time to get them to know me, because they've read so much stuff about me for so many years. They have some conjured up opinion in their head, and it might take them a little bit of an interaction. And once they realize that that has nothing to do with who I am, and I was a person before, I have been a person after. And like when they get at that point, I think they get a little embarrassed that they're, you know, if they continue on questions with that, you know, then it's like, wait a minute, this is weird. Like I was interviewed the last time it was first of all, you know, people walk up to me in a bar all the time and ask dumb questions. The last time I was sort of offended, I was on the Wendy Williams show, in the last like 4 years, and it was about something completely different.
Yeah.
And by the way, I mean, I'll say it right now because it was so stupid. I've had such a hard time finding a job, like you were talking, after the fact, when I had real credible jobs. I worked at Bloomberg News. I worked at CNBC, that I had to take a job a couple of years ago as the spokesman for Seeking Arrangement. Okay. This is a sugar dating website, which is the largest dating website in the world, but no one wants to admit that they're on it. Okay. So they paid me $20,000 a month, which was a lot of money. And I was like, I have to support my kid. No one's supporting me. And how am I going to do this? So I took the job, and Wendy thought it was it was all over the headlines. She thought it was a good story. And she's like, I want a sugar daddy. So I want to have Rachel Yucatel on. So they booked me. I came on, and for the first 7 minutes of a 10 minute spot, she's talking about Tiger and what happened with Tiger and like kind of digging into me about it. And I'm thinking,
you kind of get re-traumatized. Seriously.
Yeah. And I was like, finally, I'm like, Wendy, you know, this happened like over a decade ago. And like, but we're here to talk about something else. And she was so stuck on it. I don't think she knew how to interview me because she thought that's what all there was to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that to me was an eye opener of like, if that could even happen to someone like her, where they get, you know, they don't realize there's anything else to talk about, it would happen to anyone. So I try not to get upset now, but I do, if people want that to be the emphasis of our relationship, if they keep bringing it up, then I can't be friends. You know, I can't be friends with
absolutely
them.
Same thing. I went on the last time, I think I went on the Wendy Williams show, and now we all know she's not doing well. And health is very serious issues. Mm-hmm. And I went on, and I've always gotten along great with her. And she, you know, I knew she'd want to talk about the Trump thing. And so I did. But then the next day, she and her panel did a whole thing about how, like, I really did deserve all the backlash. And I was just like, wait a minute. You know, I was on the no-fly list, and I had to lawyer up to the tune of like $1 million in legal fees.
Yeah.
And, you know, thank God I had been saving my pennies, but still, I don't think people in, you know, in 6 years of reflection, anyone should be saying that what happened to me was justified. You can hate the picture, but yeah, the fact that.
Right. And they don't see the seriousness of what it caused you.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's one of those things where it's easy to pick on the person it happened to, but I always ask people who think I deserved it, what if this would have been your mom or your sister or your wife or who, whatever woman in your life that you love the most? Because I'm sure this happened to you, but when you're a woman and you're in this scandal, it's all about, like, I don't know, can I swear or not?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So all the threats were about my looks, my age, and how the men wanted to rape me. So it was, I want you to get raped at Guantanamo Bay while Trump watches, and I want to stab you in the cunt. And it was all this really violent, gory stuff, but unique to a female.
Right.
And that's
for me, it was, I hope you get AIDS and die. That was
So that's one of those things where when someone is being not only flippant about the scandal, but basically kind of soft implying that you had it coming.
Yeah.
They don't understand the threats of rape and you get AIDS and die.
Yeah.
And that's the part where you, when you explain to someone, you hope that they'll at least say, okay, well, that's going too far.
Right.
Just like,
right.
Look, I can say that that picture I took was really definitely moved the line and then crossed it. I've never said it hadn't. But like I said, do you really want your mom or your sister or your best girlfriend to be getting these kind of threats on a daily basis where the FBI is coming over and doing all that nonsense?
Right. And then for you also, what I think is most outstanding and the most painful is it affected your credibility. It affected what you had done for so long and what you could do going forward for quite a while. And that to me is what is so upsetting about it. Like, I've watched you on your little clips of you running out on stage now in your little, you know, vegan shorts or whatever.
Yes.
and how, and it actually almost, it brings me to tears to see how excited you are, how everyone is clapping for you. Everyone deserves that stand up and cheer moment. I think it's so wonderful. Like, I'm so proud of you. So, and that's why I think it's important to talk about not the what actually happened, but like the getting through it, because you went through so much. And I actually don't want to harp on it anymore now, but because I know you've been through it, and I want to talk about more stuff with you. But I think that is incredible that you got through it, because that 6 years was painful and long. I know, so you deserve everything that you are getting now. And I just want
every show is a treat. Every show is, you know, kind of a small miracle, because I was like not canceled. I was just basically erased. And you made a really good point about your entire body of work means nothing once that scandal happens. Mm. You know, I had Emmys and a Grammy for best comedy album. And I had set records that no woman in comedy has set. I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records for having done more televised specials than any comedian, male or female, living or dead. All that went out the window.
Yeah.
So, like you, I'm rebuilding now. I actually feel like I'm kind of at the beginning of my uncancellation. I don't have a special yet, so I might still be scary to some of the check signers in my own industry. But show by show, I feel like things are getting better. And yeah, the audience has been outstanding. They've been on their feet at the end of every show. They kind of know either about the Trump thing or the cancer or the divorce or the pill stuff. And ultimately, the PTSD stuff, I kind of feel like applies to our whole country.
Yeah, everybody. You know, everybody should knows what it is or has felt that way.
Yes. I mean, the world really is crazier than I've ever seen it after doing stand-up for decades. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's a little bit of a collective PTSD that's also happening for those of us who are diagnosed or not diagnosed yet.
Right. Wait, so I want to ask you, you mentioned your husband and you are getting a divorce. Now, wasn't he your tour manager?
He was my tour manager as well. So,
what happened?
I probably shouldn't have let our lives get so intermingled, you know, and I thought I was going to be with him forever. And, you know, what happened was the marriage became for me untenable and I wanted it to work. And I thought, there'll be another self-help book I can read, or there'll be a different therapist we can try or whatever. And it just wasn't in the cards. But let me tell you, I did not expect it to happen. I didn't think it would happen 2 days before Christmas where I'm calling divorce attorneys on Christmas Eve. Like it was just another thing that kind of made me go, okay, you're going to get triggered. And yes, it triggered my PTSD, something awful. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I'm 78 days from the last time I saw him. So I've gone what they call no contact, which is essential for my situation. So there's not a situation where we could be like buddies or cordial or anything. And so, you know, I count the days that I do not wake up in a state of like panic.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, in a way, it does trigger the Trump stuff and the pill stuff and the cancer stuff, because it's another milestone. We were only married 4 years, but we were together for 12. And like you said, he was my tour manager.
Yeah. And here you are on tour, and you obviously you're used to working with him side by side. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also somebody that went through everything with you in the last 6 years and was, you know, for better or for worse at the time there and witnessed it. So that must be very hard.
It was hard. And like I said, I thought I'd be with this guy forever, but I am happy to report I have a female tour manager now. So I promised not to marry her.
Okay.
And she promises not to marry me.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No, not that I'm judging. I'm just saying, you know, for me, it may or may not have been what led to the divorce. I don't know, but I think the fact that our lives were too look, I think there's still a lot of gender politics. I'm just going to say, it makes me sad that in this day and age, I think there's still an issue with a guy being Mr. Kathy Griffin. Mm. And I didn't think that was the case anymore, but I think that might still be an issue. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, one thing that I can make fun of Taylor Swift all day long, although I'm terrified of the Swifties, but I mean, one thing that I do love is in the history of pop music and rock and roll, when it comes to women, there's never been a female pop star or rock star that had her man, literally the football hero, like fist pumping at her shows.
Yeah.
Hope, like Stevie Nicks didn't have that luxury. Everyone with Cher was Mr. Cher. You know, Streisand doesn't have that luxury. So I hope there's a change and a shift that's finally happening, because certainly I've experienced guys that don't want to be with a woman who's well-known, don't want to be with a woman who's a comic. When you're a comic and you're a guy, it's sexy. When you're a woman, it's hard to find a guy that's comfortable being in the back of the theater cheering you on, or sitting in the theater cheering you on. But I'm sure you've had issues with guys that are apprehensive of being Mr. Rachel, you could tell.
Well, but I'm sure that, you know, first of all, it's intimidating, I'm sure, for them, because you seem much more powerful and people want to be around you instead of them. And they probably can't live up to this manliness. But you're right in what you're talking about with Taylor and Travis, because, I mean, he wins this, like, what kind of you can even write this, you know, like he wins the Super Bowl and then she's the biggest star around. And how many times did you watch that video of her jumping off stage and running into his arms? Like,
I love it. And like
so
I said, it doesn't matter if you like or don't like her music. It doesn't matter if you know, whatever. I hope she does stump for Joe Biden. I'll just say that, because she might be able to tip the election herself. Like if she gets behind Biden, she could actually be the deciding factor. But just to be a woman on that stage, run into her man's arms, he's the Super Bowl champ, he's celebrating her. And we've never seen it. So certainly the female comics who went before Joan Rivers, Phyllis Diller, Moms Mabley, they never had that luxury either. So I just like to see a powerful, well-known woman getting a guy who's not afraid to go to her show and cheer her on.
Yeah. What do you, that reminded me though, what do you think of this concept of like when people get too big, it ends up never working out. I mean, I'm wondering if you think Taylor will ever have a fall from grace, because if you've seen it with anyone from, you know, Tiger Woods to you, to any situation, it's like when people get really famous, really big, everyone likes them and is on their side, there will be a tipping point where everyone wants to pull them back down, which what I like to call this crabs in a barrel mentality, that they all climb up. And then all of a sudden, when they get to the top, the rest of the crabs are pulling them down. And I think that there's something to be said for that. You've kind of never seen someone that stays on top and remains there forever, you know, besides very few people, but there's always some sort of fall from grace.
it ebbs and flows even with the really big stars. Like I went to see the Madonna show last week and a lot of people are giving her shit because she's dressing like that at her age or whatever. I feel the opposite. I'm like, you guys, don't you think maybe she did the tour because the point of the tour was to show I'm 65 and I'm still doing the dance moves from the video 25 years ago. And she does look incredible. And she really does have the body of a teenager. And so I sniff out the ageism and the misogyny. So if Taylor Swift is gunned for in that way, it probably will be misogyny. I'm just going to call it.
Yeah.
Because people are, they're giving her, you know, her stardom now. But you're right, especially when it's a female, there's going to be people waiting to tear her down. And already the Trump people are going for Taylor Swift because they think she's a lefty. I don't even know if she is.
Right. But
I will say the MAGAs don't stand a chance against the Swifties. I mean, that
no
just
one does. It's so weird.
No, they're an army. They're an army. She is their queen.
And they're really scary.
I don't like this. And very passionate, to say the least. So I think that she's got her Swifties behind her. And so that's an extra layer of protection that wouldn't have been there for a star 10 years ago even.
Yeah. Wait, I want to go back for a second because you're talking about how important friends are now, especially now that you're going through a divorce too. I want to talk about this these ladies that lunch thing that you do, because every once in a while you'll post a really fun photo and it's all these random famous people and some that are not so famous. Yeah. But like you talked about how that started, but like, what is that something you do once a month? Like, what do you guys talk about? Give us a little inside scoop to that.
Well, I stole the idea from a couple of older women who are no longer with us. One was the great Gloria Vanderbilt, who's Anderson Cooper's mom as well. And she would have these dinner parties. And because she was older, older folks don't bring phones to the table. So it's a completely different experience. And she also would have a round table. So everybody's looking at each other, which is key. Mm-hmm. And another one was a former super agent named Sue Mengers. And she's someone I read about as a kid in Illinois, because she was a female super agent. And she represented Warren Beatty at the height of his Warren Beatty and Steve McQueen at the height of his Steve McQueen. But she was a woman and she would have these dinner parties and all these icons would attend, everyone from Jack Nicholson to Paul Simon to Steve Martin. And I got to go to a few of those parties. And no one would even dare think of looking at their phone because Sue would sort of yell during these parties, which I also stole that idea. So the rules are no phones are allowed at the table. I don't want to hear about your kid being sick. Your kid is fine. You don't need to talk to the nanny every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. My friends, their kids are all grown anyway. And no side conversations. And that's key because you put a group of 10, 12 women together and you want to meet the person next to you. And then, you know, I cast it like a play, first of all, and I do name cards at the table and it's catered. So all you have to do is show up and talk. But I purposely put people that don't know each other next to each other.
Oh, that's great.
Once we start, it's one person talking at a time. And you'd be amazed at how that's a game changer because then you actually get to know everybody. And even the shy person, I'll call on them because I can tell like who's an introvert at the party. Yeah. So I'll kind of call on people if need be. And every so often we'll do a question for the whole table. But usually people just open up. And I think the magic of it is simply because people aren't on their phones. They have to go back to actual conversation and really listening. And there is something about putting famous people with non-famous people that makes the famous people kind of leave their ego at the door and the non-famous people kind of up their game because they're going, hey, I want to keep up with this person, or wow, this person just told an amazing story. And I'm having one on Wednesday. And I actually have a guest of honor, which also is good because it makes people behave better.
One time, and is it like a secret or they know who the guest of honor
is? I tell everybody, like I had one for Monica Lewinsky. I had one for Stormy Daniels. I had one for Mary Trump. I had one for Martin Sheen. I had one for Officer Mike Fanone, who's the cop on January 6th that got pulled into the crowd and they tased him and he had a heart attack and almost died right there on live TV.
Yeah, right.
And so I usually try to do a couple comedy people, some journalists. I got to know a lot of journalists after my Trump thing because I did a lot of interviews. Yeah. So that's kind of a different group of people.
So it's not necessarily a theme. It just has a person of honor and then they kind of. Okay, got it.
And so I'm having, I have a little bit of a theme for this Wednesday, which is if you've ever been affected by a narcissist, like if a true pretty much diagnosed narcissist ever adversely affected your life, whether it was a boyfriend or a boss or your mom. And so that's our theme for Wednesday.
That's amazing. I do a lot of those episodes on my show, by the
way. Right?
Yeah.
Because I didn't really understand what a real narcissist was until I read about it. I thought a narcissist just meant someone who likes the spotlight like me. And then I read that a narcissist is someone who lacks empathy, which ended up explaining a lot, but also it's just a mind-blowing way to live. Like, I can't even imagine going a day without empathy. But then these narcissists, they wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, this person in my life was probably a narcissist. This person showed a real lack of empathy. And it kind of brings some pieces together. So that's kind of the theme for Wednesday.
Oh, that's fun.
It's you know, a really nice group of ladies. And like I said, all I ask
is... Is it always different?
Yes. I rotate the... And I have men and women and sometimes just women. I haven't done one with all guys. But like I did one for Dylan Mulvaney. And I thought I did two for her. One was all women. And then I did a mixed one because I said, okay, you're a woman now. You want to know what it's like to really be a woman at a dinner party? I invited a bunch of alpha guys. And said, let's see how you're like being a woman when these guys talk over you at the dinner table and mansplain everything. And it was really funny because she sat next to me and she was like, yeah, these guys just start talking whenever they want to. I said, oh, yeah, they think they're running this table. You better get in there, girl. And so we're laughing. But it's always an interesting group. And like I said, I don't know what it is about having a table where everyone's actually looking at each other. But everybody ends up opening up. And we just tape a couple minutes just to put it on social media. But I don't like videotape them because I think people wouldn't say the things that they actually say if they knew they were on tape.
Of course. Yeah. They can get vulnerable without it. I think that's great. Okay. So I have a couple like questions because I know we're kind of running short on time here. Okay. Do you think that you will talk about Trump in your tour at all?
I don't talk about Trump in this new show at all, but it's not that I'm afraid to or anything. Like if he does anything particularly egregious that day, then I'll mention it. Like 3 weeks ago, I was doing shows and I mentioned the $83.3 million judgment E. Jean from Trump. And E. Jean has been in a couple of the salons and she was my guest of honor twice.
Oh, that's amazing.
Everybody wanted to meet her. So I mentioned that and the audience goes crazy. But other than that, he kind of just doesn't come up. I have like a great story about going on vacation to Mexico with Sia, the singer, where just everything goes wrong. I talk about the PTSD things that I do to help me get better, which are ridiculous. Like I'm just telling you to your face, if you were to walk in on any given day, I got so sick from my PTSD, I couldn't stop vomiting for like 10 minutes. Oh, and I was like 87 pounds and I was so sick and I was in bed all the time. It was gross. And so I talk about things I do that you could walk in on. For example, at any moment, I could be on all fours on that carpet behind me, meowing like a kitty cat.
Or doing cat-cow?
Well, I didn't know that's a thing. Now you're acting like it's normal. You should see me. Meow, moo, meow.
It's a thing, but only people that have therapists probably know what it is.
I mean, honey, I'm doing kundalini yoga. I'm getting cupping. I have big circle scars on my back. I'm getting acupuncture. I do a breathwork class. Like, I don't even know how to breathe. The things I'm doing to keep me out of that bed, because when I was in that bed for 10 months doing nothing but vomiting, that is depression, my friend. So I will do anything. The latest thing is my kundalini yoga teacher, and I know this is BS.
What's kundalini yoga?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know what kundalini means. Is it a person? Is it a place in India? I don't know. Is it a kundalini family? I just do it. I don't ask questions.
But is it like the breathing one or the one where you're like doing all the movements?
It's both, but it's not that hot one, which is BS, because I already have hot flashes for menopause, so I'm not doing Bikram. I kind of do Bikram in my life every time I have a hot flash. So I just have to laugh at how I will just do anything to stay somewhat sane, and I'm only somewhat on a good day.
Yeah, I know, I get it. Okay, let's talk about the Oscars for a second, because it just happened. I mean, what were your thoughts on the Oscars? Did you think Jimmy Kimmel did a good job?
I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a great job. And look, I didn't think I'd be sitting here sticking up for another middle-aged white guy with the TV show. But Jimmy is the best. Also, he never canceled me, so of course I'm partial. But I thought he walked that line perfectly. Mm-hmm. Because look, we're in a very odd time comedically. People, you know, you typically at an award show, the host kind of roasts the guests because you're sitting there looking at women that are in $200,000 gowns,
yeah,
guys that were driven here in a limo, people that are leaving their multi-million dollar mansions. But now we're in an era I don't love because too many celebrities, when they cut to the host making a joke, the celebrity will roll their eyes or take a slow sip of water. So I think it's good that we've evolved past really evil roasting jokes because I tell people the 90s and the 2000s were just a vicious time in comedy. Like the edict, the mandate was go for the jugular. I'm glad the pendulum has swung more away from that, but I also don't want it to be so you can't even make fun of like a big giant star. So I thought Jimmy really walked the line. I thought it was great that Trump posted about him and he got to go out there live and read it.
Yeah.
And the audience reaction was like a real rah-rah moment.
It really was. I was surprised there wasn't any booing. I thought that was great.
I know. And I thought, good, people are having a sense of humor and you should be able to make fun of the president or the former president. That's all fair game.
Yeah.
And so I thought he did a really good job of walking the line.
Right.
Let's cut the crap. Ryan Gosling stole the show with I'm just kidding.
He really?
I rewound it in the moment and rewatched it again. That musical number of him singing I'm just Ken.
It's so funny that you say that. I rewound it also. I was like, wait a minute. First of all, I didn't know that he could sing.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he could perform. I thought he was lip syncing. I thought it was fantastic. And I love that he got
Remember, he's from the Mickey Mouse Club. So he was trained as a kid in singing and dancing. And we forget that he was on Mickey Mouse Club with Christina Aguilera, Britney, Keri Russell, and Justin Timberlake. I mean, what a group that was from the Mickey Mouse Club. And now it's paying off for him.
Yeah, my God. Well, he was fantastic. You're right. Okay. Are you obsessed at all with the Kate Middleton press?
Of course I am. First of all, what's happening with Kate Middleton? She can't just go missing in this day and age. And I don't want to see that same grainy picture of her in the back of a car, nor do I want to see the bizarre Photoshop picture where her head looks way too big for her body.
Yeah.
I mean, who's running things over there?
It was like a Weekend at Bernie's thing in the car. I felt like it was so odd. And by the way, I did a whole, before they spotted her, I did a whole deep dive on what kind of abdominal issues or surgeries you could have that could keep you missing for 3 months.
Nothing.
There was nothing that would keep you out of the press. And now, you know, for us to have this idea that, oops, she made this weird Photoshop mistake in this photo and they took out her ring. Can you imagine Kate Middleton sitting there using Adobe, like trying to take out? It's
she
so
didn't
weird.
Do it herself. I mean, it's just weird. But it does remind you, like, the people that run that press office are probably like boomers or something, and they don't even know how to do it. But of course I want to know. I was never as interested in her as till now.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't even on my radar, frankly. Now I'm all Kate Middleton all the time.
Right. And, so like with something like that, when it becomes such big news like that, will you put something like that in your show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'll do stuff like go read the Instagram comments if that could be material. Mm-hmm. I'll read probably the most outrageous article about it from like one of the craziest tabloids. And then I'll probably read like a legit article about it in a real newspaper. I do as much deep diving as I can because I know my audience, they want to hear about my little celeb stories, but I know they're up on the Kate Middleton stuff. Kanye's wife, what's going on with that? When pillow, let's rescue her. You know, I still look at Britney's Instagram. I'm only human. Yeah.
All these ones, it's just so crazy. Britney, nothing's changed. I mean, you know, so poor thing.
But when we follow her, I feel like we raised her. So we're not going to just not look at her Instagram.
Yeah, no, of course. I love Britney. How do you not love Britney?
Of course we love her. We love her. I met her when she was opening for NSYNC back in the day. Mm-hmm. That conservatorship was complete bullshit. But it doesn't mean we're not going to like have some questions. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Do you watch The Housewives?
Yes.
Which ones are like your favorite?
I'm old school, so I still like Orange County. Although I've been doing too much cast changing lately. Beverly Hills has certainly become the new Vanderpump Rules because of Kyle maybe being gay, which is sort of a non-issue, except they've really milked it so much. And I don't know how much those girls like call the paparazzi to be photographed without their wedding rings or whatever.
Right.
I can tell you when I was photographed by the Daily Mail without my wedding ring, I was on my daily walk. And you can tell I didn't call them. I mean, honey, I got no makeup on. I have a big hat on, like I'm a beekeeper for the sun. I just look like a crazy person the way I look every day. But with the housewives, I kind of don't know. So the great thing about the housewives is there's always this drama that's beyond the show. So there's show drama. Then there's them fighting on Instagram and then maybe calling out each other on their blogs. So like the stories kind of keep continue, but I also do feel dirty. I admit I watch them all, but I also feel dirty.
Right. Okay. Got it. With all this Andy Cohen stuff that's been going on and the fact that, like we were talking about, some people, when they get to the top, people want to knock them off that perch. I know you've had your own issues with Andy Cohen and your history with him. And, you know, a clip was resurfaced talking about how he asked you to do cocaine in the two times you did Watch What Happens Live. So what are your thoughts on Andy Cohen and what are your predictions for how this will end for him?
Well, first of all, I like a little credit. I called this shit a long time ago. Like many things, I have to admit, I love it when kids go on TikTok and they'll find some old clip of me and they'll be like, Kathy Griffin called this one too. Kathy Griffin was the only one who said it all those years ago. Mm-hmm. And I do have a history of unfortunately making enemies with very, very powerful men. And so Andy Cohen literally took my job from CNN, which I used to do for 10 years with Anderson Cooper on New Year's. Mm-hmm. And now he and Anderson do it. So, I mean, it's not like I'm fabricating the notion that Andy Cohen maybe isn't a fan of mine. He's been very openly brutal. You know, he went on TMZ one time and said he didn't know who I was. And, you know, it was after my cancellation / DOJ investigation. So it would have been nice to get a little support from the guy who had been my executive for years at Bravo. And I wish Peacock would show my life on the D-list down there and my specials. But, you know, one thing is I think I got into fights with a lot of these executives because I would see my male contemporaries and how they would fight for what they wanted on their TV shows or budget, you know, fights. And I think I had all those fights thinking, oh, I'm going to be treated equally. And in my humble opinion, I think a lot of the problems I've had with Andy Cohen or Jeff Zucker or Les Moonves, these really powerful executives, is because I was sticking up for myself.
Yeah.
And I think they have labeled me as difficult and expensive. That's the label I get. And I would argue that I wasn't doing anything more than all the guys around me were doing. But I certainly, you know, didn't pick and choose my battles many times. I often chose violence, as the kids say.
Right. So do you think he'll ride it out or you think that he will actually see some consequences?
I don't know if he'll see consequences. I think as long as he's choosing the housewives and involved with the housewives, they're probably pretty scared of him. Right. And I don't blame them. I mean, these are women that are on that show and many of them are getting DUIs. Now that multiple housewives have gone to prison.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true, yeah.
And many of them go bankrupt. And I think they try to keep up with the Joneses literally, and they buy the designer clothes. And I would imagine, I can't confirm this, but I would imagine the producers encourage them very strongly to drink a lot. I would think so, because look at how much mileage they got out of whatever was going on with Denise Richards at one dinner party. And she's not even on the show anymore. They got like multiple episodes because it looked like those women were under the influence of pot and booze and maybe other stuff. I don't know, being a pill girl, you know, I can guess, but I listen to those women when they say we were pummeled with alcohol. I wouldn't just write that off. I'm not saying Andy Cohen is there pouring the drinks, but it wouldn't surprise me knowing the nature of the behavior that you see on the Housewives in particular. If you're not flipping a table, you might get fired. And that's where I think a lot of these women are coming from, is in order to stay on the show, I have to manufacture this drama. And unfortunately, it has real adverse consequences consequences for so many of these women that my heart does go out to them, because I get it. They want to be famous. I had a show called My Life on the D-List. I wanted to be famous. And now I am. Now with all the price that comes with it, as you well know.
Yeah. Okay. Are you like us? Are you obsessed with Traitors and Love is Blind?
Duh. I mean, I can barely wait until the Love is Blind reunion, because I myself have a lot of questions. And, you know, I am team AD, first of all.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I don't think she saw it coming. Although she did call him out early as a guy that she would have picked as one of her fixer-uppers. So
right.
Do want her to find love with a different category, because I know that game where I've gone for the same type of guy.
Yeah.
Probably again and not learn the lesson. And so I can't wait for that reunion. And Traitors is just, I like Traitors because it's not horrible. Like, you're not seeing drunken, horrible behavior, and people aren't going to prison, and people aren't hitting each other, and they're not, you know, falling into the bushes. I just think Traitors is a really clever, fun show to watch.
Yeah, me too. But like, would you ever do Love is Blind?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Right?
Yeah, it would be so great, I think.
I'm all about the wall. I have fallen in love with many walls. I think I've dated that wall. I'm experienced enough to go on Love is Blind.
Right, okay. All right, just a couple rapid fire things. Okay. If you could be on a reality show besides your own, what would it be?
You know, okay, I would just say Love is Blind. Or I would be the Golden Bachelorette.
Oh, yes. I love that for you. I love that for you. Okay. But you're not old enough, but okay. Whatever. Oh,
I'd be the hot one.
Yeah. And you could date these real old men with a lot of money. It could be fun.
That's fine.
Okay. What makes you laugh?
You know, I'm sounding such a feminist, the women in my life. And the reason I say that is because, believe it or not, the biggest stigma to me selling tickets is still the stigma that chicks aren't as funny. And I just have to say, nobody made me laugh in my life more than my mom and my aunts and my mom's girlfriends. And yes, the wine was flowing. So I'm not going to say my mom should have been on the Housewives, actually. But I just think when I think of things that make me double over laughing, it's my girlfriends.
Yeah.
It's when we get together. Like, I went to the Madonna concert the other night with the craziest group of girls. I did a whole TikTok about it. Nia Vardalos for my Big Fat Greek Wedding. Lunel, the comedian, she was the prostitute in Borat. Sia, Paris Hilton, myself. We got a Sprinter van.
That's such a random group.
Random.
So did they know each other?
No, they didn't know each other. And so we all got together, and some of them were salon girls. And then Sia brought in a couple of girls, and then Nia brought in a couple of girls, and Lunel brought in a couple of girls. And then afterwards, since we were in Inglewood, we all went to Randy's Donuts.
Oh my God, I love it. And everyone stayed, like they were all friendly and like, let me get out of here.
We're a real posse.
I love that. Okay. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of anything that stops me from making people laugh. That's why my cancellation was so intense for me. It wasn't even so much the negativity coming at me. It was the fact that it couldn't work. Because yeah. I'm just such a comic. It's so in my DNA at this point that I don't know who I am without it. And to say, well, you shouldn't make your work your identity, I don't feel that way because I love my work so much. It doesn't feel like work. So whether I'm making a girlfriend laugh or if I'm being funny at a party or if I'm doing a commercial or a stand-up show or a special or a sitcom, I don't care what the platform is. I just want to be able to make people laugh.
Right. Do you have a relationship with Anderson Cooper now?
You know, I emailed him for the first time in years because I miss his mom so much. And something happened. I can't remember what, but something made me remember all the wonderful times I had with her. And so I didn't make the email about our falling out or anything. I just said, you know, I want you to know I'm thinking about your mom and the sayings. And the great Gloria Vanderbilt would have me over to her apartment and we would just sit and have tea and spill tea, if you know what I mean. And she knew everybody back in her day. And so she would say things to me like, well, your whole life can change in one phone call, you know. And that's true. It really can. You and I lived it, but in a good way and a bad way.
Yeah.
And then she would say, well, there's always more. and you're never done. And just the saying she would say, and she lived to 90, which I love. So we emailed back and forth and he said, yeah, I miss your mom too.
Okay, good. All right. Well, so you're speaking.
Sort of, I guess so. Okay. I'll take it.
Well, I like that he responded.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Okay, you were on Larry King a couple years ago, 6, 7 years ago. And he said, you seem unflappable. Does anything make you nervous? And you said, meeting Wayne Gretzky. What would your answer be now?
That was so funny. I did have a wild night with great Wayne Gretzky. I don't mean, wait, that came out wrong. Evening. His wife was there. But anyway, that's a story I actually told my Canadian shows because like they love him and he's the great one. Yeah, what's bad now is with PTSD, I get scared at the most random things. Mm-hmm. So what sucks is it comes upon me at an unexpected moment. Like sometimes I'll be just going to, like the other night, I was going to an LGBT event at the Los Angeles LGBT Center, which I was there for the groundbreaking, like those are my people. And yet being around crowds, I was going to ask you, does that still make you nervous? Because I still get nervous in crowds.
I don't like being in crowds.
Yeah.
At all.
Because you and I have been grabbed and people will pull at my hair or they'll pull my shoulder. And when you're an infamous person, I know I keep doing air quotes, sorry. When you're an infamous person, people think they have the right to come up and really kind of say anything or ask anything. Mm-hmm. And most times it's actually quite harmless, but sometimes, you know, people will say weird stuff to me. Like people will want me to pose with their head, like the Trump head. And I'm like, yeah, I straight up had the Department of Justice get me in real trouble. Like, I'm actually not doing that pose. I get that you think it's campy, but that actually wouldn't work out so well for me if Trump gets reelected. So I have to pass on that picture. But do you find people kind of grab your arm or Rachel?
Yeah. Well, it's just a case of, they think they know you, right? And they really don't. And it's there's no boundaries. And sometimes it's fun. Sometimes depending on the mood you're in, it can be, you know, lighthearted and you don't mind it. And sometimes it's really, I don't know if I would say terrifying, but upsetting, you know, and then I want to leave. So I definitely don't like crowds. I get anxiety about being recognized and not know how they will feel about me still to this day. And I know that's probably all in my head.
No. Every person that comes up to me, I find they're going to lead with something about the Trump picture. So they either come up and say, good for you, keep going, keep giving it to them. Or they'll come up and say, you went too far. Or so I've had a guy pull a knife on me. I mean, I've had a lot of really crazy MAGA people do very crazy things. So you do tend to get a little, like you get your walls up every time you're around more than a couple of people.
Well, and I mean, I can't even imagine too, just on a side note, because forget that picture, but just even talking about politics is so jarring with people and people get so violently angry about that topic. And especially if they're a MAGA person and they really want you to believe what they believe, even if they don't know you and you've never been involved in anything like you have, they can get really violent and it's, it can be terrifying. So I can't even imagine that position, for you. Yeah. Okay, one of the last questions. What like celebrity are you obsessed with that you either are like think is hysterical and making fun of, or like you cannot wait to meet? I mean, listen, it's funny that you have had a show called My Life on the D-List because you have, you know, you hobnob with A, B, C, and D, and you are not on the D-List. Everybody knows you. And, you know,
I call it having A-list moments.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I have A-list moments.
So is there someone that you still want to meet or you're like loving making fun of?
No, I, it's funny because I really make a point to try to meet people that have some sort of excellence. And I know that sounds silly because, you know, I'm a fame whore and I love chasing fame and I love all the fun and pomp and circumstance that goes with it. But I also like, I started having these salons to honor people that I just wanted to get to know better. And the first salon dinner I ever had, the guest of honor was Sidney Poitier.
Oh,
think about that. And Don Rickles was there and Joan Rivers was there. And Sidney, the great Sidney Poitier, was laughing and they were giving him so much crap. You have no idea. And he was like, bring it on. And so the only one I haven't gotten to meet or spend any time with is I would like to get to know Madonna a little bit because she's just a bucket list. And like I said, I just saw her last week And I don't discount any of her accomplishments. And like I said, I think she's getting a lot of ageism coming her way, and it's not right and it's not fair. And all the Rolling Stones are older than her and they're still touring and everyone thinks they're sexy. And so I'd love to have Madonna and like an actual one-on-one conversation and get to talk to her a little bit.
Right. Okay. What is on your bucket list? What would you like to see happen in your future, if you could call it into your universe right now? I mean, you're already on your tour, you've got that back, but what do you want to say?
Okay, this is really corny. So just having recently filed for divorce, I do want to keep my heart open. If I meet somebody at this age, it would be kind of a miracle, but that would be great. But what I want on my bucket list before I freaking die is I just want to be content with myself. You know, I have an awesome house in Malibu. I have 4 dogs that I'm obsessed with. I'm back on the road where I belong. I bring the dogs with me. I'm so obsessed with them, by the way.
Oh, I love
that. So I want to be one of these women like the great Jane Fonda, like Kristen Johnston from Third Rock from the Sun and Mom and Righteous Gemstones, like Sharon Stone. These are women of a certain age and they just go, you know what? I'm content with myself. I'm not lonely. Yeah. Or I wouldn't even say alone. And so that's a bucket list, is I want to get to that place because I've been kind of a serial monogamist. And I think it's time for me to kind of hunker down with myself and go, I can be one of these dames. My house is paid off. I'm on the road. I'm getting it canceled. Why throw a guy into the mix when I should see how everything's just going to unfold?
Right. Exactly. Okay. Tell us where we can find out your tour dates and where people can see you in person.
All right, great. KathyGriffin.com. Go to my TikTok, my Instagram. I'm on Threads. I'm still on Twitter. What's ever happened to Twitter? And so please come see me live. I'm doing 40 cities and I'm in the middle of the 40 cities right now. Then I'll take the summer off and then I'm going to the larger cities in the fall.
Okay. Amazing. I think you're going to be in Fort Lauderdale at some point. I noticed I live in Palm Beach. I'm going to come see you. Maybe we can have dinner or something. I would love it. It has been an honor. I wish you literally nothing but happiness, contentment, and peace and success. And I hope we can stay in touch.
And back at you, and you deserve it, Rach.
Thank you. So do you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.